Hello, good afternoon. I'm happy to be here with you. I'm happy to be of service to you if I can be. You know, if I could, if I had my way, and if I knew a way to do so, I would choose to take maybe a scrub brush and hot soapy water and scrub away from this meeting and from all of our meetings every vestige of the spiritual. Every little gummy thing caught in the cracks and so forth that is spiritual. You know, we've already done that to a large extent. We used to have a much more spiritual array of things here, and now we're left with nothing but Ramana, who himself was really not spiritual, and these bells, which are just bells. But what I'd really like to scrub the spiritual away from is our minds. The whole idea of spiritual, just scrub it away, get rid of it. We are enthralled by the magnificent and beautiful spiritual utterances that we have uttered over the ages. We're enthralled by them and hypnotized by them and in love with them and think they mean something apart from what they describe, which is just, well, this, just us, life, this. They are attempts to say something true and something real about life, about consciousness, about what we are all absolutely intimately familiar with already. And absolutely know that the attempt to try to say something true about it must fail. And somehow we've lost our way, and we've fallen in love with these expressions and these concepts and these ideas, these non-dual sermons that about the oneness of all being and about infinite consciousness and about, oh, I don't know, love without condition and grace and all of those things, as if they were something apart from this, these lives as they are, as if they were something that we need to strive for and try to attain, something separate from us, something different from what we already are seeing. We have led ourselves through these beautiful expressions, these beautiful utterances. We have led ourselves to trying with all of our hearts to see what we are always already seeing, to understand what we are always already knowing, absolutely, just as we are. Nothing changed. We have, in some way, this whole, and I am no, I'm nothing different than you, but it seems to me that in some way, this whole spiritual adventure, this whole spiritual game that we have sold ourselves, this bait and switch operation that we have fallen for, from our own con game, has itself brought into being deep-seated, unseen, unconscious, unknowable, fundamental belief that I am this life, that I am this personal consciousness, that I am at stake in what is thought here, what is done here, what is experienced here, with what I want and what I don't want. that the shape of this life and the shape of this personality and the aspects of this personal consciousness mean something and are vitally important. That if I want the wrong thing, I'll go to hell. And if I do not want something that I should want, I'll go to hell. Or I'll die. Or I'll God knows what. We have somehow, and this is a great mystery, we have somehow created within us this lie, this unseen, unconscious belief that I am this life, that I am this consciousness, these thoughts, the history of what I imagine to have come before and the expectations of what I imagine is going to happen in the future, that I am these desires, that I am these aversions, that I am this aggressiveness or this contraction, or that I am this open-heartedness and generosity. And the consequence of that belief and the consequence of it in our lives is immense. It becomes fraught with misery and suffering, fraught with fear and anxiety, with the determination to keep an eye on everything, to make sure that nothing is thought that shouldn't be thunk, nothing is wanted that shouldn't be wanted, nothing is kept away that shouldn't be kept away, nothing is believed that shouldn't be believed, nothing is not believed that should be believed, nothing is seen that shouldn't be seen, nothing is spoken that shouldn't be spoken, nothing is kept silent that should be spoken. And we live our lives endlessly watching everything, making sure that everything is going to be the way it should be, even though we know that it never is. That we are abject, worthless creatures who are surely going to go to hell no matter how hard we try. And we ride this wave of fear and anxiety and frustration and anger and the desire to be loved, and the desire to love. And the only thing that gives rise to all of this is this false belief. There's nothing spiritual about this, where there is this false belief in play that I am this life, that I am this entity, this iteration of personal consciousness that comes and goes, that's endlessly changing and shifting. Its face is never fixed, never. And we know that throughout the ages, the beings who speak about these matters have told us that the problem that we have is misidentification, that the problem that we have is that we believe ourselves to be what we are not. They've told us that. And it's been mixed up in this conglomeration of things that we have created that we should do in order to fix ourselves, in order to have this iteration of personal consciousness be free of the false, the misidentification, which itself is the belief that I am this iteration of personal consciousness, which is absurd. And we imagine that there's something that we can do within our lives, within our consciousness, within our minds, within our thoughts and feelings and so forth, that will finally rid us of the misery and suffering that our lives, for the most part, consist of. Not, you know, big dramatic misery and suffering, but this underlying sense that things just aren't quite right. And we get saved and we go to church and we go to spiritual meetings and we learn about the Buddha and we undertake meditation practices and we recite mantras and do nama japa and all the things that have been offered to us as ways in which we can make this personal life free of what? The belief that I am this personal life. that the what needs to be done is that bad thoughts have to be expunged and good thoughts have to be encouraged, or better yet, that all thought needs to be wiped out because thought itself is a problem, or that what needs to be done is to make it so that the nature of this life, the nature of this personal consciousness, is open-heartedness and generosity and clarity and no confusion and no aggression and no sense of separation. Practices that we have convinced ourselves will produce that. Spiritual practices or religious practices, or I don't know, I guess people go seeking after money for the same reason. To clear up their lives, to clear up, to make themselves happy and free. And of course, none of it works. None of it has ever worked. Never. And there are those among us who are the same as we are, who have from time to time seen through this fog of the belief that I am this life, and have told us, and we hear this from time to time, running through all the spiritual utterances, that what you are trying so hard to see, you are already always seeing, that nothing needs to change, that things are as they are, just as they are, that there's nothing for you to seek, nothing for you to get, nothing for you to get rid of. They have told us that as we embark on the ferry boat of spiritual practice to get to the far shore of freedom, that when we attain that far shore of freedom, we will discover it is the same shore that we left, not similar, but the same. We're back where we started from. They've told us that reality is just exactly as we always have seen it. And we hear that, or at least I heard it, and I thought, oh yeah, that must be talking about something really, really exotic that I won't get until I attain what I'm seeking to attain. It's almost impossible for us to even suspect that what they're saying is the literal truth. That just as we are, just as we begin, just as we end, is reality just as it is truth just as it is, that we have never been bound, that we are not what we think we are, not what we think we are. We hear that, and you know, we know that the problem is that we believe ourselves to be ego, and that ego is the problem. Ego needs to be destroyed. Ego needs to be done away with. That's the problem. If I can get rid of ego, then I will no longer falsely believe myself to be ego, the limited one, the contracted one, the thought that appears within this personal consciousness and disappears within this personal consciousness. And all I have to do is get rid of that. And we're willing to work on that. And nothing works, really. We find ways that we can get high, or we can feel good, we can get hits of spiritual experience, bliss and open-heartedness and clarity and so forth and so on, but they all go back to whence they came from. They come and they go. We try desperately to hold on to them when they're here and they slip through our fingers. We mourn their loss and wish they would come back and that the present state would go away when they're gone. One of the spiritual practices that has been around for thousands of years, really, is the practice of self-inquiry. And the practice of self-inquiry, up until, so far as I can tell, the appearance of Ramana in this arena, the practice of self-inquiry itself was a spiritual practice. It was intended to, by means of working on looking, investigating what I am and what I should be and so forth, of clearing the fog of confusion so that the light of true self could shine through. A spiritual practice, a way in which the light could clear the fog of confusion that is this personal consciousness and transform it so that I can transcend this limited existence. But Ramana is different. And the self-inquiry of Ramana is different. I'm not 100% certain that he saw how different it is. You know, I mean, you know, he's just like us, right? He was a 16-year-old boy when, by a stroke of luck, he happened upon reality. And he spent 12 years after that, I suspect, trying to understand what had happened to him. And came out of it with one thing that he said consistently, without deviation, to everything that was asked of him: who asks this question? Who are you? First find out who you are, then deal with all the rest of this. For whom is this problem? And by some stroke of luck, I heard Ramana. And I heard something very much not spiritual. Here's the deal. It is true, as they have told us, as we have always known, that the only problem is this false belief about what we are. No matter where this false belief came from or how we fell for it, I have a little story that I tell. But there is this false belief about what we are, this false belief that we are these lives, these personal consciousnesses. And that's the only problem in all of humanity, is this false belief. This belief is what gives rise to all the misery and suffering, all the hatred and aggression, all the murder, all the warfare, all the horror whatsoever that human beings inflict upon themselves, that we inflict upon ourselves. And we have tried to rid ourselves of the effects of this false belief within our personal lives to no avail for many thousands of years. When the fact is that the only thing that can possibly help us is to rid ourselves of the belief itself. And there's no way that this can occur by convincing ourselves otherwise, because the selves that we try to convince otherwise are precisely these personal consciousnesses which we are totally know to be what we are. The only thing that can rid ourselves of this false belief is the truth, is to see directly, without mediation, for ourselves, the truth of what we are. And this truth of what we are is absolutely ordinary, which it must be. If it's not ordinary, then it is something new. If it's not here all the time, then it is something that has come into being and will disappear from being. If we are willing to see what we are for real, if we are willing to see the truth of what we are, it is absolutely easy to do so. We are, I am, you are, we are, this unmoving, unchanging sense of presence that is always here, about which nothing can be said. Really, this sense of being that is never absent, that never changes, that is unaffected, unhurt, and unhelped by anything that happens in the life, by any circumstances at all. This presence that we are always conscious of, whether we are awake or asleep, whether we are suffering or happy, we are always, always conscious of this underlying presence, this underlying awareness that is what we are. Now, what I found out is that all that it takes is the determination to see that directly, not to know what it's supposed to be, or to talk about it, or to name it, or to sing songs about it, but to see it directly for yourself, repeatedly. Now, it's really easy because it's always here. It's you. You're never absent. You're never missing. You're always the same. Thoughts change. The body changes. Experiences change. There are states of happiness and unhappiness that pass through you. But you're always here. You're always the same. You are the same now as you were when you were three, when this body was three. You are here. You are absolutely, perfectly, ever-presently here. You cannot deny that. You cannot doubt that. Everything else you can doubt, that you cannot doubt. We are, all of us, for the most part, for most of our lives, for most of the time we spend awake, unaware of our awareness of this reality. We are very much caught up in the flashy movement of thought and in the sensations of the body as they come and go and move around, and in the things that I want, or the I don't feel so good right now. I feel kind of dull-witted and stupid, or, oh, I feel really great right now. These are the flashy things that hold our attention, but no matter what flashy things are passing through, you are the same. You're always here. You have no doubt about that. None. You have no possibility of denying that. None. So here's the deal. All that's required is that whenever you can, whenever it occurs to you to do so, you move your attention to that. Just to look at that. And the looking does all the work. There will be no big splash of sudden enlightenment. Or there may be, but if there is, it will go away, as it has in the past. There will be no sudden fiery transformation of your personal consciousness into 360-degree vision. Or there may be. But if there is, it'll pass. What will happen as a result of your repeated looking at this presence, just for a second, every chance you get, what will happen as a result of that is, unbeknownst to you, since the belief itself is unconscious and we cannot see it, but unbeknownst to you, this belief will get eaten up. It'll get riddled with wormholes and gradually disappear. And the way you'll know this is not by the flashes of insight or understanding or clarity or dark nights of the soul or spiritual melodrama or any of that, although all that may happen. The way you'll know that is that over time you will notice that life is easy, that there's really nothing that needs to be done, that there's really nothing that needs to be gotten and nothing that needs to be gotten rid of. Over time, you will notice that the call, the drive of the underlying layer of fear and anxiety has no meaning to you. Over time, you will notice that the sense that you are at stake in this life has, I don't know where I put it, it's gone. And you will see, as you have always seen, and you see this is the kicker. As you have always seen, you will see things as they truly are, as you do right now. And you will see what all the fuss is about, what everything that has been spoken that seeks to say something true is trying to say, as you have always done. And you will see that you have always seen that, and it really isn't a big deal. It's you. It's all of you. Nothing special. All you. Just as you are. And then, quite surprisingly, you will see that you have kind of relaxed into your life. This life that you had in the past believed to be you, you kind of relaxed into it and merged with it, with no separation, with no warfare going on, with no holding things at arm's length, machine gunning this, wooing this. But this isn't spiritual. Spiritual is all of the special things that happen, that come and go. Spiritual is that which comes and goes, that those special experiences of either great longing or great love or great horror or great clarity or any of that. That's spiritual. And it's okay. Really, it's okay. It, as everything else, is you. But you are you, no matter what states are present. Really. You are you, no matter what's going on. No matter how circumstances playing or not playing. You're still you. And you are unhurt and unhelped by any of it. So this is my experience with self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is, so far as I can see, it's the only thing we can do. And I also see that one of the things that drives us throughout our lives is a kind of craving for identity. We try to become something or be something or you know, and you can see it in the culture. The culture plays to that craving for identity. Be all that you can be. Be who you are. That's not who I am. That's, I don't know what that is. It's also played on by spiritual aspiration. Be Buddha mind. Well, that means you're not Buddha mind, right? Contrary to what the Buddha said, you're not. Be, I don't know, infinite consciousness. That means you're not infinite consciousness. The other consequence of self-inquiry is a finishing of that craving for identity. The whole thing stops. You are, as you have always been. So, I guess that's pretty much all I have to say. I wish I could give you a transmission of some big spiritual experience. No, I don't. But I tell you, this is the secret of eternal happiness. Truly. It's the secret of discovering the eternal happiness that you already are. Which is not different, which is not new. really. You already are. So anybody want to talk to me? Hi.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to see you. As always, I need to ask you your name. Every time I speak to you, I have to ask you your name.
It's Magda.
Okay.
I know who I am.
Yes, you do. That's right, you do. Is the microphone on?
Yes, it is.
It is, yeah, okay.
Okay. I'm in a little bit better shape than last week, or last time. My question has to do with it's really about making choices.
Choices.
Choices, yeah. Is it me that's making choices, or is it being made? I seem to have there's a struggle in making a choice, because there's this, okay, maybe this one is the right one, or that one is the right one. But then there seems to be a fluency at times where it's just kind of spontaneous and okay.
That's most of the time, isn't it?
That's a lot of the time.
It's really most of the time. I mean, if you consider that most of our lives are spent in mundane endeavors.
Right.
Like getting up, brushing our teeth, getting a shower, cooking breakfast, going to the store, going to work, all of that. When you reflect on the fact that most of our actions are of those nature, you must see that most of the time there's no sense of choosing whatsoever. It is this
That's
fluent,
true.
Kind of just flow of action that seem to have little to do with. It's only when something appears that we assign some importance to, or something special to, that the idea that we're making a choice arises.
Okay.
And we can, you know, I mean, it's, what's your experience? My experience is that, let me tell you what my experience is. My experience is that if I tell myself that I have chosen to do this, to go this way, and it works out well, then I say, aren't I something? And if I tell myself that I've chosen to do this other thing and it doesn't work out the way I wanted it to, I bemoan the fact that the universe has refused to give me my way. But in truth, if I look at the nature of things, not just the mundane actions of the day, about which I never pay any attention, to which I never pay any attention, but also things that seem to be much more personal and much more intimate, such as thought. Thought. I have no idea how to think a thought, and yet thought comes. And by the time I see it, a thought, it's already here. So if I have nothing to say even about what thoughts are being thunk in this consciousness, how can I possibly think I have anything to say about what I do from day to day, what choices I make in the way this personality unfolds? And I found that in my life, I have found that the whole issue is really kind of beside the point. I mean, so what if I think I'm making a choice? So what if I think I'm not making a choice? In either case, things just occur. Things just unfold as they do. Whether I think I'm making a choice or think I'm not making a choice, something happens. So the whole kind of meta level of thinking, am I choosing or not choosing, is just, I mean, it's okay. It can't hurt you. It can't do you any harm. It can't help you either. It's just kind of exasperating.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
And in point of fact, however this life unfolds, however, whatever, you know, movement it makes in this direction or that direction, does it change you?
No.
No. So, who cares?
Well, it's...
Choose if you wish to. I mean, really, you can choose all you want if you wish to, or don't choose if you wish to. In either case, you are the same.
Right. It's just the... wanting to be in tune, how I would say, with myself to...
How could you not be in tune with yourself?
Try to be.
That's just thought, though. That's just thought. That thought, you have nothing to say about. We've already seen that. The thought, I should be choosing or I should not be choosing, I should be in tune with the way things really are, that's just a thought. You can't be out of tune with yourself. Really. Even that thought is totally in tune with reality. What does it matter? It comes, it goes. It shakes up the mind a little bit, it goes. You are the same.
Right, I think I have that.
Yeah.
But yet, when there's this thing that says, well, this is important, you need to make the right...
Right.
Choice here. Now then it's like, well, who is making this?
Yes, and that's a good question. You know, but you can go ahead and make the choice. One of the truly unbelievably radical things about this self-inquiry business is that it doesn't require you to change anything that's happening in your life. It doesn't require you to abandon any practices, including the practice of trying to decide whether you're making choices or not. Even that trying to decide, you know, should I be making a choice? Is this important? Is it not important? That doesn't have to go. It goes on its own. You know, and the only thing that makes it seem like that's important and that has to be resolved in a way that's in tune with reality is the vestiges of this belief that you're in this life.
Is that like an issue of control that I'm having, maybe that I'm still...
So long as there's a vestige of belief that this is you, mm-hmm. this life, its history, its thoughts, its actions, and so forth, then there will be a vestige of an attempt to control. But you can't rid yourself of that attempt to control. That's part and parcel of believing you're the life. And you don't need to rid yourself of that. All you need to rid yourself of is the belief that you are the life. And the only way to do that is to do what you're doing so obviously, which is when you can, look at what you really are. Look at the truth of it. Look at what doesn't change. And it's the looking that does it, as you know. Right? So, I can tell you with Ramana, that as Ramana said, whatever you may want to happen, if it's not to happen, it won't happen. Whatever you want not to happen, if it is to happen, it will happen. I can tell you that, but that's not going to change the occurrence of this sense of, well, is this really important? Is this something I really need to put my mind to? And you don't need to do away with that. It doesn't hurt you. You see? It really doesn't. And it just goes away. None of your practices have to be abandoned. None of them. None of them. Not this. Just look at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And look at you. Look at the last time we spoke. Look now.
Yes, it's much better.
Yes.
It's just that aspect is somewhat agonizing.
Yeah.
It seems to be a lot of agony in
yeah. But the agony, agony's okay. Okay. Really, it doesn't hurt you either. You look and see, right?
Right. That's
it doesn't
true.
Hurt you either.
It doesn't.
It's just a drama going on.
Again, yeah.
And it's here today, gone tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You just keep your eye on the ball.
Yeah.
You see?
Yes.
Is that helpful?
Yes, it is very helpful.
Okay, good.
Especially the part about giving it importance.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
But you can give it importance. That too.
I can do whatever.
You can do whatever. You know?
Doesn't change
you check
anything.
And see. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't help you not to give it importance. You're the same. Always the same.
So
you're invulnerable.
So you can't add anything to
that's
the
right.
self or take away from the self.
That's right. And you know that. Yes.
Yes,
I couldn't
I
say that if you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what goes on in your mind.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm very happy to see you. This is one of the most difficult things to speak about, is the fact that contrary to all of our spiritual education and our spiritual understanding, really, it doesn't matter what you're doing. It really doesn't. It doesn't matter if you're trying to be better, if you're trying to be worse, if you're trying to rid yourself of bad thoughts, trying to hold on to good thoughts, it doesn't matter. It doesn't touch you. It has no effect on you. It only has effect if you believe yourself to be this life. And I say you're not this life. And this is verifiable. This isn't like, you know, I say that Jesus Christ is going to come in clouds of glory, which may be the case for all I know. And you should give your heart to Jesus, which may also be the case for all I know. But it's not like that. It's more like if you put your finger on a fire, you'll get burned. If you look at yourself repeatedly, the idea that you are your life will vanish over time. And you can see that for yourself. And all the rest of it is beside the point. All of it, beside the point. All your practices, okay, don't matter. Okay? Anything else? Yes. Nancy. I'm so proud of myself. When I know somebody's name, I'm so proud of myself.
Something that I've noticed that I've been doing lately is just in the past few days, and sometimes, you know, like these things come and go, but I'll have this feeling, you know, I've all my life suffered from depression and anxiety. Well, the anxiety has just been recently, but depression mainly. And I've noticed the past few days that I get this feeling like I'm going to be depressed. And it's almost like I catch it before the other thoughts come. So I get this feeling, and then I think, okay, I don't have to go there thinking, you know, that I'm no good or this or that. I don't have to attach to that thought. So I just have this pre-depression feeling. That's the only way I can describe it. And it doesn't actually, and when I can stop from attaching, you know, these certain thoughts start to come and I go, no, I'm not going to go there. And I can actually stop the depression.
Well, hallelujah.
And yeah, I find that amazing because I never realized I could do that before. That was never an option for me. I never knew that there was this.
How could it be an option for you if what you are is this consciousness, this person? Now, obviously, it can't be an option for you. Depression comes in like a cloud. You can't.
Right.
You have nothing to say about it, nothing to do about it. But in the absence, as that belief begins to wear away, and you know, the interesting thing, Nancy, is that really, from my point of view, right, what's happening is the thoughts, oh, I see this coming and I don't need to go there, are just descriptions of what is happening spontaneously, which is that there's nothing at stake for you in this depression. And for some reason, it doesn't grab you like as it used to, because there's nothing at stake for you. If it comes, it comes. If it goes, it goes. And then there's thoughts that come which try to explain this astonishing difference in the way the circumstance is unfolding.
Right. It's almost as if my I'm conditioned to, it's almost like a conditioning that's gone on my whole life, where I get this feeling or something that comes over me, and then my mind has to step in and and explain why, or prove why this is so, why this feeling is this way. And it always comes in as negative.
Right. And that's, of course, that's true for all of us. You know, states appear, circumstances appear, and right along with them, chasing right behind them, are thoughts which explain to the satisfaction of some imaginary being, right, why this is happening to me, and why it shouldn't, or why it should, or what I can do about it, or how I'm at the mercy of it, and these are all just happening, things that are spontaneously arising phenomena. The sensation of depression, the thoughts explaining it, all of this is spontaneously arising phenomena, which has nothing to do with you. It's just things that come and go. When the grip of the idea that you are this life, and that there's something desperately at stake, when depression comes in and settles in and takes over you and takes over your mind and your spirit and your everything, when that grip begins to loosen, then reality sets in, which is that this is a spontaneously arising phenomenon that always has been trailed by these thoughts explaining it, and now it's being trailed by new thoughts explaining it because it doesn't have the grip it used to.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. And but you are the same.
Yeah.
You've always been the same. When there was the conviction that the depression had you by the throat, still you were untouched.
Right.
You were the same. The difference is that now you know it. You know you know it. You've always known it, see? But now you know it. That's all.
I'm hoping that this, realization doesn't pass, because I know that things come and go a few weeks ago.
But you don't. See?
Right.
Realizations come and go. Insights come and go. Circumstances change. They come and go. But you don't. And that's what this is founded on, is you. The whole shift in the consciousness and the shift in the way you live your life and see your life and view it and look through it and so forth, it has occurred is founded on this rock solid foundation, which is you, which never changes. It doesn't come and go. You don't come and go. You're here always.
My mind comes and goes.
Your mind comes and goes. That's right.
Yeah.
So you keep your eye on the ball. You keep looking at yourself. You know, the consequence of this in your life is immense. Really is. And it's not immense in the way you imagine immense to be. You know, you imagine immense to be that you grow wings or get a halo or something like that, right? Or the mind opens up and but it's not immense in that way. It's immense is it in the seeing which you have always been seeing, which is its immensity already.
It's immense in a subtle sort of way.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
This is great good news.
I hope so.
It is. It's good news. You know, it's the circumstances will change. It may happen that you start, that this mind starts fixing, getting involved and engaged in wondering whether it's free of this, wanting to not be free of this, wanting, you know, I mean, because, you know, like it's depression, but at least it's kind of familiar, you know, I mean, right? You're familiar with it.
That's where it goes, to the familiar.
Right, and the strategies that have evolved over time are familiar strategies. And, right, you know, that may, you may relapse into that, but you won't be touched, and you know it. Everything changes. Everything comes and goes. Everything but you.
I'm beginning to realize that.
Yes, you are.
It's pretty amazing.
It is, and it is astounding.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, I felt like I was having this shift in consciousness, and then wanted to enjoy it while it was happening, and then I just sort of fell back into the depression and the, you know, the immense, I don't know, the thoughts, the mind,
yes,
you know,
right,
all that stuff that it does. And then just the past, I would say 2 days, is when I started realizing that I don't have to go there with these,
yes,
thoughts. And that, you know, if someone tries to bring me down, I don't have to go there. You know, I mean, I know it's going to, there's going to always be people trying to bring me down or whatever. You know, and I know it's going to happen, but I don't have to attach to that. And,
yes.
And I hope I can just maintain that.
You don't have to attach to that, and you don't have to keep them attaching to that. You are the same. The consequence of this loosening of the grip of all of this is not the result of learning how to do something new. It's the result of being rid of something old, gradually erasing something old, and you'll see. Just keep looking at yourself, and the amazing thing is, right, that like this shift of consciousness. Well, a shift of consciousness is not really what we're looking for.
Right.
You know, we have those. That's what depression is for the love of God. It's a shift in consciousness. You know, it's not what we're looking for, is a shift in consciousness that's good rather than bad, because it comes and it goes, and what comes in its stead is always something worse than what felt so good.
Well, it feels worse because
what
you had was felt so good.
That's
and
right.
And then when it goes back to where it was,
that's
it feels
right,
even worse.
But
know?
When you see that you've got no dog in this fight, right, then what's it to you?
Right.
Shifts of consciousness that feel good, they come, they go. Shifts in consciousness that feel bad, well, they come too, and they go. But you've got no dog in this fight. Really, you don't. And gradually you see that. And somehow, as you see that, as that belief that you're involved at stake in what happens in your life, in what states come and go, as that somehow, mysteriously, the whole war comes to an end. This whole business of machine-gunning depression and grabbing a hold of, you know, clarity and lightheartedness and so forth goes. And the war ends where it begins, which is here. Okay? I'm really happy to hear this, Nancy. Really.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Got to scrub out the spiritual. Spiritual is all of the mind. Really. It's not bad. It's just not helpful. You know, once this underlying lie is gone, then, oh, yes, right. Oh, look at this. Wow. And then, of course, it followed by usually the come down is worse than the high. But that's okay, too. Really. It's all you. All you. Anything else?
My name's John, too. So.
John?
John.
Hello. Is that an IAM?
That's correct.
Well,
I work at the airport.
I used to be a full-fledged member of the IAM.
A machinist?
Yeah, machinist, yeah.
I just wanted to tell you the name John, a story about that. My mother told me when I was growing up that the apostles, out of all the apostles, Jesus said that John was his favorite. And she told me that story. And boy, I think she helped me out for my life because I always felt like I was.
They told me that, too.
The favorite. My grandmother told me that. Whether it was true or not.
Yeah,
but, sure, I think it helped me on some level. You know. But I'm here because through a friend of yours that you know, a great man. His name's George Collins.
And, oh, I know George, yeah.
Works up in Walnut Creek, and he works with men who are addicted to sex.
Yeah, I know.
Fortunately, that's my story. That was my story. But what he did for me was psychological work. But through the psychological work, he told me about people like you, Ramana, Gangaji. And before you know it, the psychological was secondary, and what was therapeutic was this, and that's why I'm here.
Ah, that's good.
I want to thank you for whatever you have done to help me indirectly.
I'm glad to play that part.
Well, thanks.
Really.
One other issue is I have a daughter whom I adopted, who's severely bipolar. Right, she was born addicted to several drugs and. My wife and I, we agreed to take her on. We were hoping for the best, but she's been having a real rough time the last year. It's all kind of come on her. And there's tremendous rage and bipolar disorder. But one of the techniques I've used to help her is what your lesson was today, is that I tell her what's always there, Chloe. It's always there. Even in the midst of tremendous rage, I constantly ask her that question. And whether it works or not, most of the time it doesn't. I usually get that glass of water thrown at me, whether that's the case.
It doesn't matter in the moment whether it stops the behavior or stops the rage or anything. What you're doing is you're telling her the truth.
Absolutely.
And that's all you can do. And I guarantee you that it is the greatest gift that she could receive, no matter how it looks.
There's a saying that George always says it touches my heart. It says, love is always received.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's...
You know, how old is she?
She's 10 years old.
Uh-huh. Well, she's very lucky, really. Yeah, all you can do is tell the truth, and that's the only truth there is that, is what you've just said. The rest of it is all commentary, including the bipolar, all commentary.
That's my message. I just want to thank you.
Well,
I want to thank
welcome.
All of you. Yeah. I've never been in a room with this many spiritual people. Nor have I been to a... I don't even know how to say satsang. Is it satsang or satsang?
Satsang, but
okay.
It's...
This is my first one, and that 15 minutes of silence nearly got me. I almost had to get up and run out. Cause I'm so, but thank you.
Oh, you're really welcome. I'm very happy to hear from you.
We'll see each other again.
Yeah, let me know how you're doing.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, this is excellent. The therapy is useful, you know, but it's more useful. It becomes more and more useful the less you believe that you're at stake in what's happening in that mind. And that's the truth. You know, as long as we enter into a therapeutic situation in order to get fixed, to get better, well, you know, how much good does that do? But you gotta be looking at the truth. And the truth, you know, it's the other thing that this guy Jesus said, which is true. The truth will set you free. There's a way of being spiritually quibbling about the way that utterance is, since you. We all know, already, always are free. But that's beside the point. The truth will set you free. There's only one truth, really. There's only one. It's not two. Just you. Just you. Exactly as you are. Nothing changed. nothing kept from changing, just as you are. This underlying, unchangeable, immovable certainty. Okay? And you look at that every chance you get. And you know, when I was in the grip of great spiritual melodrama, the reason that I want to scrub out all the spiritual stuff is because I have had ample experience with spiritual melodrama myself. I am prone to these things, these dramatic things. And in the grip of the greatest spiritual melodrama, when I was against all of my better instincts, trying to do what Ramana said to do, knowing all along, of course, how unspiritual that was, since we all know of it. Well, we're already, you know, trying to do what Ramana said to do. And I would read in talks, he kept saying things like, just do this and everything will turn out right in the end. Just find out what you are and everything will turn out right. Everything will be taken care of. And I used to be so infuriated with that. But it's true. Just look at yourself whenever you can, and everything will turn out right in the end. You won't know how it did. You won't be able to say, oh, right, this is what I did, and this is, oh, and then I had this experience, and then this understanding came, and then I had that insight. It'll just turn out right. And you'll see what you've always seen. Okay? Anything else? Yes. Hi, what's your name?
Mo.
Mo. Good Mo, name. Yes. You have to hold that up to your mouth so that...
I'm a bit afraid of speaking about experiences after...
That's okay.
After years. A few days ago, I was sitting quiet and... I was pretty calm, and then I started asking, who am I? And there was a stage where I felt like I'm kind of melting in a way. Like the body is disappearing. I got a fright and I just, you know, jumped back to the thoughts and stuff.
When
it was an experience.
An experience, and it came and it went.
Yeah.
But you stayed.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, body melted, you stayed. Body came back, you stayed. That's the point.
Yeah.
You know, it's when I speak about experience and the uselessness of them as far as giving us anything that's lasting, right? I don't mean to suggest that self-inquiry doesn't trigger experiences. It does. It can trigger huge experiences. It doesn't always, for everyone. But it can trigger huge experiences of the kind you speak of, and also very powerfully horrifying experiences. Right? It did for me. But they're beside the point. The point is what I just said. That when the experience was here, you were here. When it was gone, you were here. You weren't changed during it or after it. You are the same. And that's the point of these experiences. And that, in that way, when these thunderous things occur, and they may not, better they don't. But when these thunderous things occur, you can use them to your advantage by just checking and seeing. Well, wow, that was something. Have I changed any? Am I not still here? Was I absent then? Did I go anywhere? Right? And the point of that is not, you see, this is where sometimes it's But this is something that I really need to see, that we all really need to see. It's not that by looking at yourself, you gain an understanding of what you are within the mind. You know, you may gain understandings, but they will not encompass what you are. They can't. Nothing really can be said about you. Whether it's because you're too vast or because you're too simple is beside the point. Nothing can be said about you. So when I speak of the fact that you check and see, is it not true that you're still the same, you're still here, it's not in order to bring some new understanding to your mind that you're always the same, but just to bring you in touch with this reality. Just to have you so that you're looking at this reality of what you are. You see, because that's what does the work. And understandings, well, they come, they go, they change. So I just wanted to clarify that. Whenever I say to you or to anyone, check and see whether you are not still the same, or aren't you still here? Aren't you still the same? Are you changed by it? It's not in order that you can come to understand that. It's just in order to trick you into looking at yourself.
Also, another thing, I see it more in like, meetings with you, with Gangaji. There's some kind of, it's probably also an experience, but there's some kind of joy that is like, is coming like, from underneath. Kind of,
that joy is, it certainly is an experience. It is the mind making something of what's here, what's real. But you are a joy, not something new, not, but this ordinariness, this ordinary, plain, everyday, simple reality is joy. It's life. It's alive. It is overlooked because you are never missing. But it is joy, and it's not surprising that it creates experience of joy within the mind. That experience will go. You know, it'll turn into something else. It'll turn into yearning or wanting or just kind of dullness or something else. But you don't go. And that's the joy. Really, that's the life. That's the aliveness. Okay?
Thank you.
I'm happy you came up, Mo. It's good to see you. I hope I see you again. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm always raining on everybody's parade. You know? But really, life is joyful. Really. You know, these bodies, these minds, these consciousnesses, these are the eyes and ears of awareness. They are the ways in which you see yourself, feel yourself, taste yourself, touch yourself.
Larry.
I know, Larry. Well, I did. I'm glad you told me, Larry.
I just came up here to say something positive about spiritual experiences, or maybe I should say unusual experiences. Not common experiences, because I started having them almost on a constant basis, like almost 4 or 5 days a week, you know, wake up and see what I was going to, like be asleep and then see what I was going to do the next day, and then, you know, it would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible amounts of synchronicity beyond what I could imagine, you know. But the only thing positive I want to say about that stuff is I could see that, you know, after it was over, I'd still be depressed, or still be unhappy or whatever. So it wasn't really doing anything, except it did get me to this.
Yes, right.
So the only positive thing I could say about those experiences is it started pushing me towards something, and it ended up being this.
Yes, that's right. That's a positive thing about them.
Yeah. So that's what the positive thing I wanted to say about them.
That's, I agree with
and
that.
And I still get them, you know. I mean, but I don't.
I get them too.
And I don't say, oh my God, there's another one.
I pay them no mind.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like them, you know, like I'll hear an old Jim Croce song or something.
Yeah, right.
On the TV, and I haven't heard it in 20 years. And then I'll go into the health food store and they'll start playing it, you know, and I'll say, wow, yeah, yeah. You know, it's like, it's kind of nice, you know.
It is nice, yeah. But you know, life is like that, really. Life is sweet. Really is. It is sweet. Life is not hard. It's not filled with misery and pain. Hardship comes, pain comes, but sweetness is what underlies life. It's the sweetness of this possibility of seeing all of this, of tasting all of this, of hearing, you know, music and even of seeing the clouds of depression, you know, like the clouds in the sky. Life is sweet.
Yeah. That's the only positive thing I wanted to say about unusual experiences.
I think you're absolutely right.
I still enjoy them, but I don't say, okay, there's the answer, right. You know?
You're the answer.
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you, Larry. That's very good. I agree with that. Yes. Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is... You're going to guess?
What is it?
Mahiar.
No wonder I can't remember that one. It's outside of my cultural limitations.
Yeah.
But I remember you.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask, I wasn't planning on asking this, and it came up out of something you said, and it's something I think about a lot around satsang. And you were talking about the sweetness of life, and what comes up for me is that true for all people? And what I mean by that is, like, I'm not going to make assumptions about everybody in this room, but probably there's a certain privilege that's happening. And I'm not seeing people in satsang that have a lack of a particularly economic privilege. Mm-hmm. And so...
Oh, this country is hugely privileged. Yeah,
yeah, but not everybody in this country is either, but that's I'm not right. seeing the people in this room that aren't.
Yes, that's right. But the thing is that even those in this country that are not in this room, that have not heard anything about this, the most privileged in this country are among the most miserable. So it's not the privilege that produces the sweetness.
That's true.
Right? And it's not the lack of privilege that produces the pain and suffering.
I don't know.
Well, if the most privileged can be filled with pain and suffering and remorse and suicidal impulses and so forth, and no amount of material comfort and material well-being can eradicate that. And, you know, those who continue to seek after more and more because they imagine that they will fill themselves up and be able to be free of there, then it must also be true that the lack of material privilege and comfort cannot be the cause of misery, because misery is present in those who are resting in material comfort.
But even when it's not just a lack of comfort, but when it's lack of just basic needs?
Yes, right. Here's the thing. There's nobody but you.
I mean, I know, yeah.
Really, there is nobody but you. We have throughout the thousands of years that human beings have suffered from want and disease and need and riches and all of that stuff. We have tried every possible thing that we can try to bring justice and equanimity to the human species. We have. We tried political means, religious means, spiritual means, educational means, war means, everything. We tried and failed. No matter what we do, there remain this percentage of us that live in abject poverty and lacking even the basic essentials of life. no matter what we try. What can put an end to that is what can put an end to the entire warfare of I want this and I don't want that. And the and it is there is no one anywhere in the world but you. This is where it must end. What we can do for that is to bring the possibility of being free from warfare in our own persons, in our own minds, to everybody. Now, the fact is that I have been in circumstances that were really kind of abject and discovered that in the absence of the belief that I was this person subject to these circumstances, that there was nothing present but joy.
Say that again.
That there was nothing here but joy.
Mm.
Right? We've tried everything else. What we can do is, you know, because this is really interesting. I didn't expect this to come up.
Mm.
But this is interesting. I tell you that the whole concept of personal liberation, of enlightenment for the individual, is a lie. It's all a lie. There is nobody but you. There are not two minds anywhere to be found. There are not two beings anywhere to be found. Therefore, the idea that I can be free and enlightened and saved while you are stuck in misery and suffering and the conviction that you are at stake in this life must be a lie. It's not true. What's possible is to, it really is possible for every human being on the planet to hear this, and hearing it, to look and see what's real. That's all that can happen. That's all that can work. There's nothing else we can do. And the fact is that it is true. No matter what my circumstances, no matter what the circumstances of this life, I am untouched by it. No matter whether I am the rich celebrity who can't get enough of what they already have and are driven to suicidal behavior, or I am the abject, poor ghetto dweller who doesn't have a place to lay their head. I am untouched by any circumstance. I have never been changed by anything. I am unmoved by it all. That's the truth. That's the fact. And you know it's a fact. Every mind, every human mind on the planet can be freed of the idea that they are at stake in this life. Really. Every human mind can be. It doesn't take anything. It doesn't take signing up for anything. It doesn't take abandoning anything. It doesn't take giving up anything. It takes only this possibility in this moment of looking to see what's real, what doesn't change, no matter what my circumstances are, what's always been the same. And anybody can do that. And I guarantee you that anybody that does that will see that life is sweet, no matter what the circumstances. Anybody. Because there's nobody but you. There is no life other than yours. Really.
I don't know what that means.
It doesn't, I don't know what it means either. Awareness calls forth these lives. It's kind of a categorical imperative. Awareness calls forth these lives to see itself in all of its, all of the ways in which it can see itself, and the hatred and the warfare and the bloodshed and the genocide and the rape, the murder, and the psychological torment and the suicide, in the glory and the wonder and the experiences of uplifting spiritual seeing, and the love and the compassion and the generosity. You know, it's all composed of this reality that itself has, doesn't change, is untouched by it. And I promise you from my heart that if I don't know how many, but if enough human beings were freed of the belief that they were at stake in their lives, that the whole of humanity would be transformed. Really. That the whole business that keeps people in the streets and sleeping on the concrete would vanish. The whole aggression and hatred and greed and warfare that we are familiar with in our own lives. You know, we don't need to look far to know that we have ourselves in our own lives felt this greed and this unwillingness to relinquish something in order that somebody else can have it. We've all known that. I promise you that in the absence of this belief that we are at stake in these lives, that would vanish. Greed would vanish. Lust would vanish. It would. And life would reveal itself to be sweet. And nothing else has worked. And God knows we've tried it all. We've tried it all. Politics, psychology, religion, preaching, salvation, warfare, revolution. We tried it all. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that it is absolutely true that no matter how abject the circumstances that seem to be the case for any individual human being, the reality of what they are is untouched by it and is sweetness and joy itself. No matter circumstances, the compassion that gives rise to that question, to that concern about the physical well-being of the people other than yourself, arises from the recognition that you are them. That the one who suffers on the street is you. It's not separate from you. Compassion is not the kind of is not generosity. Compassion is what it means, which is to suffer with. It is the recognition that so long as there exists within one human mind the idea that I am bound, it exists within me. And it's that compassion, that light of compassion that shines forth as that question, and that in most cases produces some, and there's nothing wrong with it. Do what you can for everybody. Try to help. Try to give food to the hungry and give solace to the sick and all of that. Really, do the best you can. Try with all your heart to help people, to take away the physical aspects of their suffering. But see too that in the end, what must happen in order to put an end to this insanity of our species feeding on itself, causing pain and suffering and misery in sections of itself in order that I can live in comfort, or because I imagine that that's what's needed in order that I can live in comfort. This must end, and the only way it can end is to end this lie that I am this life, that I am at stake in this life, that the circumstances of this life is what gives me happiness and satisfaction. So long as that belief exists, injustice, poverty, suffering, hunger, rape, murder, all of that will exist, because that's the source of it. Do you follow that?
I heard, I mean, even there was something you said earlier today that in a way answered that, but I still needed to ask the question.
That's good that you asked the question. The question comes from a genuine compassion. It's not an emotional compassion, but there's a genuine compassion here. A compassion that recognizes we are not at stake in this life, but as a species, we are all at stake together in this lie that we have inflicted upon ourselves. Mm. And imagine what it would be. My God, imagine how it could be. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm very happy to see you again.
Thanks.
Okay, that's it. You don't have that coming, Dan. Enlightenment is not an option. This has been really quite an afternoon here. I am your servant, really. That's my role in this life, is to be your servant. You and all the people in the world, to be your servant. To be whatever help I can be to bring us all to a meeting with what's real, to a taste of what's real, to an end of this lie. I'm speechless with gratitude. Thank you for this time together. Om Shanti.